My bones denounced, the buckboard bounced, and the cactus hurts my toes. Lips are loose, where girls keep wearing those silks and satins and linens, it shows. And I'm always in buttons and bows.
Welcome back to Wings Nuts, the audio program that talks about each and every episode of classic 1990s sitcom Wings. Once you pop, you can't stop. I'm Jared, here with Emerson. Emerson, how are you today?
I'm good. You know what? That's like a, is that a potato chips tagline, right?
Yeah.
Once you pop. That also is true for 12-year-old boys going through puberty.
Ooh.
that can refer to both pimples and or masturbation.
Yeah, well, what did you do when you were like in science class in seventh grade and you got a boner? What would you do?
I would just kind of wait for it to go away, or you know, like the textbook trick.
Yeah. I have like a distinct memory of like looking around, no one's watching, like tucking it up under my belt.
Oh, gotcha.
Pointing straight up to the sun.
Well, some curve the other way. And but like I feel like I was so self-conscious about it, but I also don't think anyone would actually have noticed. Not to say that I'm, you know, I got like a little shrimpy down there, but like you know what I mean? It was so like, it was like the most embarrassing thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like before I was an adult, like anytime somebody would like joke with me about like masturbation, no, I don't do that. What are you talking about? Deriving pleasure from?
It's a horror show being a teenager and just getting boners for no reason.
Yeah, riding the school bus, just like the bumpy ride. Yeah, like nodding off on a road trip, looking at porn. Oh, yeah, that was also the era. I mean, I feel like this has been touched on by so many comedians, but we grew up in that pre-internet era where it was like, if you could get your hands on a dirty magazine, it was like fucking gold.
Mm-hmm.
It was like more valuable than saffron or whatever. And we did like I grew up in Van Nuys in like a very what's the word, like suburban part of like Los Angeles neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But we did, somebody like discovered, one of my like my friends that we like would hang out with, he found like a box of porn that was like tucked, you know, like those little access recesses that go under your house that like plumbers can use to climb down and stuff.
The crawl space?
Like, yeah, the crawl space. And like, yeah. I don't, in Los Angeles, since we don't really have basements, there's like a little like kind of square that you can step down into and pull like a little like, I want to say like 2-foot by 3-foot screen. That might even, and then
just
you can kind of
shimmy on in there. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they found like a box of porn underneath that area. And we would like, man, it was gold for us.
Mm-hmm.
Had that specific smell to it of like old mildewing pages that have like been through like wet and dry weather and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. My friend, I remember my friend's dad had like every Playboy for like 3 decades. So we spent a lot of time in his garage.
Oh, hell yeah. I remember also watching like when I had friends that had actual like pornographic videos, like watching it with them. And we're all just like uncomfortably, you know, like squirming, but like, you know, we never like did the, because I guess like some friend groups, they do that thing where they all just like jerk off together.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That was never a thing in my friends group, but like, you know, sometimes people would take extra long shits.
All right, we're starting to sound like Roy here.
Yeah. I gotta get his cackle down. Okay, so this week we're talking about season 3, episode 9, mm-hmm. Try to Remember the Night He Dismembered, which first aired December 5th, 1991.
Does that make sense, that title?
No, like I was trying to figure out if it was like a reference to the 5th of November, like remember the 5th?
Yeah.
But I couldn't figure out like what it was referring to. And did you have any thoughts?
Because I read the synopsis before, you know, watching the show. And so I'm like, oh, there, Roy does a crime. And I just figured he like murdered someone.
Yeah.
No, I have no clue what that is. Why they named it that.
Me three. Like, it's the weirdest. Like, and when I tried to search, like, try to remember the night, you know, seeing mm-hmm. if there was like some other title, I just came up with Wings.
Well, shall remain a mystery.
Yes, yes. All right, so we got an IMDb synopsis. This one does not have a credited writer, but it does. It's kind of like a little bit of like the RCS 0411, I should specify, I should clarify, vibes.
Mm-hmm.
IMDb synopsis. The Nantucket airport is fogged in, so parlor games are broken out to pass the time. Eventually, Brian is enticed to hypnotize some of the others. After a silly moment with both Lowell and Joe, including a post suggestion for chicken clucking, Brian hypnotizes Roy, who admits to burying $250,000 in his backyard. The gang decide to dig it up, only to catch on that it was a ruse, and Roy is putting in a hot tub the spot they dug up. Roy comes back and sees the hole, thinks the gang is gone, and starts chuckling. He starts cackling. The group comes out from hiding to confront him, and he admits to the deception, laughing as he heads to the back door, asking, "Where did all the dirt go?" The last laugh is on him, literally, as he opens the door.
Yep.
Yeah, this is a fun episode.
Have you been hypnotized before?
I've never have, no. How about you?
No, I really want to be. I'm curious if I can be.
What are your thoughts on it? Like, do you believe that it is? Because it's always depicted in shows like this where the person is like completely under, you know, mm-hmm. under a spell. And I don't know if it like occurs truthfully in that way, or if it's like, you know,
I think truthfully it can. Some people are, and there's ways to test who's like more susceptible to hypnosis than others. But I think some people can just like knock right into it. And, you know, I it's definitely a real phenomenon,
mm-hmm.
but the logic of its usefulness has changed over time. Like, you know, I think originally it was used a lot in like, for like hypnotic regression to pull up memories and stuff, but it's found that like the hypnotherapist can really affect, like you can implant, thoughts and memories as well as you can recall them, you know. And they also say like, oh, you can't, and Joe alluded to this, you can't make someone do under hypnosis what they wouldn't have done anyways, or is it anything outside of their own like moral grounding? But I think that's misunderstood, like a misnomer as well. Cause if you just look into the case of like Sirhan, for instance, it's, I think you can like make people, it can be used for nefarious purposes too.
I think my thoughts on hypnotism kind of fall, or can be summed up by this Jack Handy quote. I don't think I can be hypnotized. This hypnotist tried to hypnotize me one time, but he couldn't. And I tell him that each time I go over to wash his car, which is every Wednesday.
Tell him to rotate my tires.
Man, I gotta say, like, I feel like every character was firing on all cylinders this episode. I really mm-hmm. liked Lowell. I really liked Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it was a classic ensemble. It was just, you know, they didn't drive the Helen Joe plot at all or anything. It was just a fun ensemble episode.
Yes, yes. And we get to see like a lot of Roy.
Oh yeah, Roy. Okay.
The best.
He was fantastic.
Yeah, doing show tunes and stuff, which that's why I think, as some of you may have noticed, that's why I think that this episode might mm-hmm. not be available on Paramount Plus.
Yes.
And we will, if anybody needs it, email us at RCS. just kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. No, send us an email and we can hook you up with a way to watch it. Yeah. That song was Buttons and Bows.
Buttons and Bows.
I think it was recorded by Dinah Shore, Doris Day. And I read that it was also the theme to F Troop.
Everybody, my bones denounce the fearful trounce and la 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 mold that grows. Bought a Seuss, a palm capoose, and a pantyhose and pantyhose. You look funny, buttons and bones.
I love, like, we get very dry Brian, like, a lot through this episode. Mm-hmm. Like the kind of thing where it's like, you're like, hey, you want to grab lunch? I don't mind driving. Oh, sure. Yeah. Let's take your clunker. And why don't we advertise it for all the girls on the island to watch me drive as a passenger in your piece of shit car? I don't know. It's just like,
I know.
He's kind of like, he's got like the RIP Matthew Perry. He kind of like, mm-hmm. An early Chandler going.
Oh, a little snark, huh?
Very snarky.
And there was a moment where I thought he was kind of like straight manning it a bit too, where he says, when he asks Faye, oh, who made you road boss? And she said, well, I brought the cocoa and marshmallows.
Yeah.
And he goes, I will literally follow this woman to the gates of hell or something
yes.
like that. And
I'm like, yeah.
It wasn't a very like, it didn't. Hit me like a normal kind of Brian remark.
Yeah, it felt, it was that same tone, but like in a positive way.
Yes. Yeah.
Man, so, I am pink today. I don't know. Like, I don't know if it's wearing headphones or what, but like,
it's that dry weather.
It's that dry weather for sure.
It's just standing on your feet all day.
Yes. All right. So anyway, you were getting into the cast and crew.
Yeah, we got some cast and crew here. This one was written by the team of Bill Diamond and Michael Saltzman, the writing team there. Mm-hmm. They previously wrote Hell Hath No Fury, Like a Police Woman Scorned, Looking for Love in All the Wrong Places, Mother Wore Stripes, and Is That a Subpoena in Your Pocket?
Ooh.
One notable guest star, Cary Idell. He played Man. Now
he must have been the one asking about the fog, right?
Yeah, he was very. Who then Antonio drives to back to the hotel.
Yes.
So he was in Chud. He was on Married with Children.
Is Chud that like horror movie?
Yeah, it's the it has a Daniel Stern in it, I believe, and it's like the monsters that live in the sewers,
isn't it? Oh, it stands for like something humanoid under
yeah, it's killing me that I don't remember. I've seen this movie.
I can tell you what Daryl stands for: data analyzing robotic youth life form. But Chud is cannibalistic humanoid underground dwellers.
There you go. Oh, and I see now that there's a Chud 2. I've never seen Chud 2.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and Know Your Meme says, Chud is a slang term used online to refer to people who are considered far from socially normal and unpleasant to be around.
Oh, interesting. So we're a couple of Chuds here. A couple of Chud heads.
So Cary Idell, he was on also on 30-something, A Different World, and he played Larry Mitchell on Daddy Dearest. That was a recurring role. And that was a show with Richard Lewis and Don Rickles that I think only lasted a season.
I remember. Oh my God, wait, I vaguely remember that. Were you a Richard Lewis head?
No, I don't think so, but
I was familiar with him because he had like a little bit of a mullet going. He always wore like blazers with like t-shirts underneath it. I feel like he had like a very like distinct look. And I think that he had some jokes that we like. God, the 80s really were just like the era for like comedians to be like nationwide famous. Mm-hmm.
And I think the 90s too, when like Comedy Central first hit. So like, I know I watched Richard Lewis stand up back then, but he was like not one of my guys. He seemed like your father's comedian kind of.
I think that I knew him from the 80s, like watching, watching like stand-up specials with my father. And so, and like, you know, like as a young kid that wanted to be funny, I would try to like see the things that made my parents laugh and try to like emulate that stuff.
So, oh yeah. Yeah.
You know, and oftentimes it was me trying things. My parents would just like laugh endlessly. Oh yeah, good luck with that, buddy.
Yeah, my dad's comedians were like Eddie Murphy, Bill Cosby, Richard Pryor.
I think I liked Louis Anderson.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. He was really funny. The guy like that ended up having a TV show or a cartoon.
Howie Mandel.
Yeah. 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 Those were like the big ones.
Yeah.
So yeah, not a lot of guest stars.
No. Okay, I'll start us off. I'll start with the I've been starting with the Boston Globe lately, so I'll keep that up.
All right, cool.
Got a cool little headline here. Soviets admit they can't stop Ukraine.
Wow.
The Soviet Union admitted yesterday it was powerless to halt Ukrainian independence, but stopped short of recognizing it outright. So this is like in that era where the Soviet Union is collapsing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying, oh, Russian accent, fuck. I'm not saying anybody's going to stop it. There is no question of stopping the independence. The Soviet Foreign Ministry spokesman Vitaly Churkin told reporters. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, states are splitting off from the Soviet Union. The independence of Ukraine is a new political reality, said Boris Yeltsin, president of the Russian Federation. Yeltsin, whose republic recognized Ukraine 2 days ago, was quoted by the official news agency. Everyone should be interested in the stability of the Soviet Union, so we expect other countries in determining their attitude and their steps and their timing of their steps to take into account those facts, he said. And it notes that Ukraine was the site of the Chernobyl disaster. And Gorbachev said, disintegration will bring misfortune to millions of our citizens. There is now speculation that separation will bring benefits, but this will be short-lived. So, hey, I don't know how that could possibly be relevant today, but that's what was going on in 1991.
So we have on the front page of the Inquirer and Mirror, a day that will live in infamy. And this is like an article about Pearl Harbor, which is so interesting to think that like in 1991, Pearl Harbor was something that had happened 50 years prior.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were still like plenty of people from that, you know, who had experienced that firsthand still.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like somebody now, you know, who would have been like have conscious memories of Pearl Harbor would have to be like in their 90s, right?
Super old, yeah.
Yeah. So gross. Old people? Not really. Okay. On a Sunday morning in 1941, a 13-year-old girl named Ruth Murphy frantically signaled to a pilot flying at eye level outside her bedroom window on the Hawaiian island of Oahu.
Oh, that one, yeah.
Oahu.
Oahu. Oahu.
The little girl feared he was about to crash into the house next door. Awakened by the commotion, her father, a Navy troubleshooter stationed in Pearl Harbor, cried out as the sound of machine gun fire suddenly split the morning air. "My dear, those aren't our planes. The pilot was Japanese. The date, now etched in the collective memory of history, was December 7th. The little girl stood praying as her father ran toward the Navy base. Bullets flew around him, shattering the knee of a small boy and piercing the walls of the neighbor's home. I was afraid for my father because we saw people getting hit and he wasn't ducking. We kept yelling at him, but he couldn't hear us, she said. The moment marked the surprise attack by the Japanese Imperial Navy that left thousands of Americans dead and hurled the United States into World War II. It also left Ruth Murphy, now Ruth Flanagan, with a lifetime of fear-filled memories. While bullets rained from the Japanese warplanes, the young girl huddled under her bed with her mother and brother. She remembers her mother refusing to answer a knock at the door in case it was a Japanese soldier. She remembers how the cement floors seemed to buckle beneath them when bombs landed nearby. It felt like getting hit in the stomach. It was like a lightning bolt, she said. Anyway, it goes on to talk about the whole experience. One of the things I thought was interesting, though, was one of the guys who was below decks. He was an officer, and he had to like kind of rush up and... His name was Philip Herring, a Navy ensign at 26. He took charge of the gun deck on the California the morning of the surprise attack on Pearl Harbor. 26 years old. Just these babies that are like,
yeah,
suddenly like rushing up and seeing all this like death and destruction around them. But he's saying that shooting down Japanese planes didn't fill him with a sense of power. He was filled with remorse. The sensation deepened when he witnessed Japanese planes actually turning broadside to allow strikes as they flew over small U.S. boats carrying the wounded to mainland hospital. These guys were doing a marvelous job, said Herring. This is like a football game. When you are in actual combat, you feel much closer to the enemy than the people back home. You're in the same boat with these people. You're suffering the same thing. You've each got a gun. Which is also...
Damn.
Yeah, which is an interesting thing because he was on a boat firing at Japanese pilots in an airplane. So they weren't on the same boat, dude. pick a different metaphor, buddy. But
yeah.
Nah, I thought it was a really interesting article.
Yeah.
In 2051, they'll have a similar article about September 11th.
Yeah. In other goings-ons, this is from the Boston Globe. A lot of the new, there were several articles about Terry Anderson being released. So he was an Associated Press journalist that actually he was the chief Mideast correspondent for the Associated Press. And so he was released in Lebanon. So the article I found most interesting was this one. Bush lauds Anderson's release, says the ordeal is not over. President Bush yesterday hailed the release of the last American hostage held in Lebanon, journalist Terry Anderson, but said the hostage ordeal would not be over until all remaining captives are freed. I join Terry Anderson's family and friends in their happiness for his return to freedom after 6.5 years in captivity. Marlon Fitzwater, who was the White House spokesman, continued, "The president told Terry that people from all over the country have great respect for him and have expressed that in many ways over the years." So Bush thanked UN Secretary General Javier Perez de Cuellar and his personal representative, Gian Domenico Pico. He also thanked the governments of Iran, Syria, and Lebanon for the roles they played, calling it a positive development to which we welcome. As for future relations with Iran, Fitzwater said the policy was the same, that goodwill begets goodwill. But nevertheless, they are still a terrorist state, and there's no change in that, he told reporters. Fitzwater said the Gulf War and the collapse of the Soviet Union have clearly made countries in the region take a look at different attitudes towards the hostage-taking process. Many of the spokesmen in Iran have said exactly that, that our policy being put in place over the years and the other changes to the world have indicated to them that it's no longer in the interest to maintain hostages. Kind of a funny thought.
Like, yeah.
It's not politically pragmatic to take hostages anymore.
No, it really isn't.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't remember the last time a bunch of hostages were taken in some sort of conflict. Can you?
Nah, it's been what since the Brazilian miners, yeah. And they were taken hostage by the mine itself. That's crazy. Yeah, very really. I also like love that he's like thanking them, but then still describing them as a terrorist state. You did good this time, you terrorists.
But where are we at now with Iran? We're cool with them now, right? Last I checked.
Well, I was like looking at Google Map pictures of it, and it's beautiful. I would love to visit someday, but that does not seem like a realistic thing. So, we're back to the Inquirer Mirror over here. The headline, and I feel like you probably predicted me pulling this. Meat shops. Yep. Meat shops fiberglass cow is utter disappointment to HDC. And it's a photograph of like the owner. So Damian Turbini and the HDC are at odds over whether the statue of a cow he put in front of his Pleasant Street meat shop is a commercial symbol or a work of art. And yeah, so everyone agrees it's a lot of bull. The life-size fiberglass heifer in front of the chef's table is too much cow for the Historic District Commission, which is seeking an opinion from the town's lawyer as to whether the statue can be ordered removed. But butcher Damian Turbini says that since he put the fake bull in front of his Pleasant Street shop Friday, business has doubled. Kids love climbing on the animal, he said, and people stop by just to look at the beast. I think he's been adopted by the whole elementary school, said Turbini. We've had nothing but positive feedback. The children love him. Neighboring business owners and school children have offered to start a petition drive to keep the bull in front of the shop, he said. No laws disallow such a statue, according to Turbini, despite the strict architectural control regulations under the island's historic district designation. I've researched that thoroughly, he said. The Historic District Commission has another view. That agency upholds the regulations designed to preserve the island's historic character. This includes regulation of the design of all structures and commercial signs. They will ask the town's $110 an hour lawyer to decide if a fiberglass cow is one of these. Hey, what kind of lawyer do you guys have over there?
We picked the $110 an hour lawyer.
Ooh, I'm still using a 75.
What did the hooker say to the $110 an hour lawyer?
I like try to find like the punchline to the actual joke.
I know, me too.
It's a commercial symbol that's effectively a sign, said HCC Administrator Pat Butler at Tuesday's meeting. The HCC needs to take a stand on it. It is a problem. And I feel like I did research on this previously, and I think in the end, Turbini was forced to take it down. But it's like, it's crazy.
Well, the Historic District Commission had a cow, man.
It's also so, I mean, I feel like we've talked about this exact same thing previously, like, or like similar things, but the idea of like historic preservation is not like preserving a true idea of the history. It's the idea of like, you know, maintaining what you view as like the ideal tone and feel. It's a very MAGA without being MAGA, like sort of gesture. Cause like, if you're truly being historic, you gotta tear every building down and like return the island to like the pure to nature.
Yeah. And Turbini, like in that article, he pointed out too that this fancy hotel, the White Elephant Hotel, has a elephant shaped bush in the front, and the Chanticleer restaurant has a carousel horse on the front lawn.
Yeah.
So like, they don't mind the district commission doesn't mind these adornments if they're kind of like high class. They just don't want a big cow with kids jumping all over it.
Yeah, I mean, I also hope that like it's secure enough for the kids to be safe. I don't want the kids to be hurt.
Yeah. And we do need to point out that in the headline there, utter disappointment was spelt U-D-D-E-R disappointment.
Yes, it was. Very nice pun work.
I love that when journalists get to flex on like those kind of goofy articles, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, shall I say, give me that. Okay, I got a couple of quick blurbs here from the Boston Globe. Pilatus is released from hospital. Rob Pilatus of the disgraced lip-syncing rock duo Milli Vanilli is out of the hospital following days of observation after what sheriff's deputies said appeared to be a suicide attempt. Pilatus, 27, left Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in good condition Tuesday night. So he took pills and straddled a hotel's ninth floor balcony rail before he was taken into custody by sheriffs and placed under 72 hours of hospital observation. What I found interesting about this is I've always like held the notion that one of the members of Milli Vanilli like died of suicide, but I guess he had this suicide attempt and I looked it up and he actually died of what is considered an accidental drug and alcohol overdose years later.
No kidding. Oh, yeah. I think I always assumed that he had died from suicide as well.
No, I feel like that's a widely held assumption because I've heard it many times. But when I followed up, they said it was an accidental overdose. He like died in the bathtub.
Oh, man, that's crazy.
Yeah.
He went to Houston.
Mm-hmm. And this was, and it, I think it was 96 when he actually died. And in my memory, it was closer to this 1991 date that he died. And it was like, oh, shortly after the, the scandal that broke. But in reality, Milli Vanilli were kind of like on an upswing at the time he died. They were on tour and they released an album where they actually like sang on it. So
fascinating.
Just another quick blurb from the same section. MTV to air Pee-wee's special. Due to the overwhelming response to Pee-wee Herman's return to television during the 1991 MTV Music Awards, MTV is planning to show Pee-wee's Playhouse Christmas special. The special originally debuted on CBS on December 21st, 1988. And features Zsa Zsa Gabor and the Del Rubio triplets. And I just wanted to mention that because that is my all-time favorite Christmas special. I watch it at least once every year.
I'm familiar with that. That's super cool.
You've never seen that?
I don't think I've ever seen that, no.
Oh, it's so good. It's like, it's a star-studded, really fun. Charo's in there. It's great.
Man, that sounds great.
Yeah.
I was trying to find, I think I might be wrong. I think that like, it sounds like the bowl stood.
Really? Is it still there today?
Do over. Well, I think the business closed.
Oh, okay.
Because at that time, I think of the article, it was the it was like the meat market or something like that. And then later it became a different name. And so I don't know. I don't know if it even exists as a meat market anymore.
Yeah. Wait, was it a cow or a bull?
Same animal, isn't it?
I don't know. You know, the bulls are like the dudes, right?
Male cows, I believe.
Yeah, it'd be cool if someone put a China shop there. That'd be kind of funny.
Yeah, one of the follow-up articles I saw like talked about how it's been causing more trouble than the proverbial bull in a China shop. I think it became the Nantucket Meat and Fish Market.
Okay.
Which does still exist. And let's see if I go to Street View. I'm not seeing any bulls.
God, that Nantucket historic town commission. It seems like they spend all their time just like poo-pooing people's signs and shop ornaments.
Yeah. Like the liquor store, which we followed up, and the sign is still standing today. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming that if he eventually won that fight.
Yeah.
Look at that. Taxi residency rule claims first victim. What is this? Did you read this one?
No.
Since May, taxi owners have been required to be Nantucket residents. Oh, yeah. I remember seeing something about that earlier this year. Now, for the first time, an applicant has been denied a license because he doesn't live here. Mike Sutherland says he has lived on the island since 1987 and that he was on the taxi license waiting list for 4 years. When his name came up, he was given a license last summer. Now, officials have told him he will not be given a license for next year because he cannot prove he is a year-round resident. I was flabbergasted, Sutherland said in a letter to the editor in the Inquirer Mirror last week, written clearly without wearing a t-shirt. Sutherland could not be reached for comment. He admits in his letter that he has never had a phone in his name here and that he files his taxes in Michigan, but he questions whether this is a fair basis to deny him a license. I am now at a crossroads, he said. I don't want to pound nails. I don't want to wait tables. I don't want to just get by anymore. The six-month-old residency requirement applies to owners, not to the drivers they hire. It says licenses will only be issued to inhabitants of the island, and anyone who leaves the island immediately forfeits their right to run a cab business here. Police Chief Randy Norris said anyone who is able to show a lease for an island housing unit, an income tax form showing payment from Nantucket, or a voting list with their name on it is considered a resident. He said the rule was put in place at the request of the Nantucket Taxi Association. And so we're getting people who have an actual stake in their business rather than someone who's here just in the summer to make a killing, said Norris. The regulation does not violate any laws, he added. It excludes no class of whatever. I think when the article bounces to the next line and it feels like they might have missed a sentence.
Mm-hmm. They were making some kind of point there.
Yeah.
How long do you think Antonio's been a resident?
Well, he had that. He was working at that restaurant before, so mm-hmm. I'm sure he's been here for ages.
Yeah.
Creating a seasonal taxi license with a higher fee would be an alternative plan, said Russell. Taxi Association President Chris Walton said that he believes the regulation, in fact, corrects an injustice that existed between year-round and summer owners. Summer owners.
Mm-hmm. Summer cab people.
They come here during the summer and work their tails off and run with the money while the people who are here for the winter are working for $5 a day, said Walton. It's not fair. And that's how it ends. I skipped a bunch of it too, but anyway. I don't know. I don't disagree. I do feel like give a bone up to the people that do have to like survive the winter season.
Yeah, give a bone up to them.
Yeah, give them a leg up, is that the word? I don't know.
Pop up that bone, tuck it under the belt.
They're all in the same boat.
Yeah. I'll hop over to the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror here myself. There's a lot of ink about the Christmas stroll, and I read it all, but it's all kind of boring. The item that really interested me was headline here. Capizzo's soccer comment raises some parents' hackles. So this is an article about the athletic director, Vito Capizzo, from the local high school. According to parents and players who appeared before the school committee Tuesday night, Capizzo allegedly referred to soccer as a commie round ball sport prior to introducing the Nantucket School Soccer League's all-star team. The remark encouraged some students to boo the soccer players, causing only 5 of the 21 players to stand up and be recognized by their peers, parents, and league organizers. And then they checked in with the high school principal, John Sullivan, and they say he was angered by allegations that there was no administrative leadership at the school and said that he heard no booing at the rally. I'm sure Vito's remark was made with his tongue firmly buried in his cheek, Sullivan said. So you got the head of this high school there kind of defending the athletic director. And then Vito himself said,
There was no malice intended by that remark whatsoever, and I'm sorry this thing has been blown way out of proportion. Kids have been my life, for God's sakes. Why should I punish them?
If you don't mind, I'll share a letter that was written to the Nantucket Inquirer-Mirror from an eighth grader at the school who happens to be a soccer player and was there.
Mm-hmm.
To the editor, I would like to state the fact that I am bothered with our community's non-support of the Nantucket soccer program. The youth soccer program enables students to have an alternative fall sport. The adults involved in this program have worked hard, nurturing us by developing both our mental and physical skills. Above all, they have taught us what true sportsmanship really is. Throughout the experiences I have gained participating in various sports, I have learned to respect all athletes regardless of their skill level or the sport they play, only their determination to be the best they can be. For no apparent reason, the soccer teams have constantly been criticized. Last Friday's pep rally was the most disturbing. The athletic director, who is supposed to encourage all athletes, publicly called soccer a commie round ball sport. We were then booed by the upperclassmen. I cannot describe the pain and frustration put upon us by the athletic director in such a public forum. I should hope in the future he could keep his personal opinions to himself, because at no time do we show this kind of disrespect toward the other athletes. I would also hope the community could learn to respect us as athletes and understand our love for this sport, soccer.
And I Googled Nicole Marks, and it seems like, you know, she went on to like play soccer in college, it looked like.
Uh-huh.
And she has owned real estate, as well as like kind of like retail stores on Nantucket and also in Carmel, California. Well, her and her husband, and it looks like they own a interior design construction type company now.
Interesting. Cool. Yeah. Very cool. I want to acknowledge a quick little birthday announcement. It's a Ooh. Picture of three. It's a black and white photograph of three children, and accompanying it is not as short as the kid on the right, ? Not as tall as the one in the middle. Never will be. If you get my drifty, he's turning 50. So happy birthday to whoever the fuck that is. And I also wanted to bring our attention to a really hilarious comic strip on page uh-huh. 2 of the Inquirer-Mirror. It's a couple of bird hunters, and they're watching a silhouette of Santa Claus and the reindeer pass by a full moon. It's either full or it's like a waxing gibbous. Might even be a waning gibbous, if I'm going to be honest. And then underneath that it says, "The fat one at the back is mine."
That's harsh.
So these hunters are hoping to bag themselves a Santa Claus.
Damn.
Yeah.
Hey, I have one last item I'm interested in sharing. In their entertainment pullout section, they had like an interview with Slash, and he had a couple things to say about Michael Jackson and Bob Dylan.
Okay, interesting.
On recording with Michael Jackson for Black and White, I only played on the intro thing where that Macaulay Culkin kid or whatever his name is plays air guitar in the beginning of the video. So I'm on that. But when it goes into the actual song, that's not me. That doesn't sound anything like me. So I was a little pissed off after all the work we'd done and getting together when I realized Michael was promoting it as such. Jackson helped make it up by having Slash play for the entire song last week on MTV's 10th anniversary special. An overall opinion of Jackson? He works really hard, which is something I can appreciate because I don't like to fool around and waste time. He's real personable, and we got the stuff done. It was actually probably easier to do than anything we do in Guns. So not a pleasant experience recording with Michael Jackson for him there, and here's what he had to say about recording with Bob Dylan.
The guy was impossible to work with.
No matter how amiable I might be, Dylan was just impossible to relate to communicate with. I couldn't figure out whether he knew what he was talking about or not. I played on a track that was really good. I wouldn't say it was good if it wasn't. And then he took it off at the last minute. It was really sort of perturbing, you know? It's not like I tried to do it for the money. And so I guess Slash had recorded with Bob Dylan, and Bob Dylan just like released it without his guitar solo on there. And I looked it up, and it was a song called Wiggle, Wiggle, Wiggle. And it was not the best Bob Dylan song. I just remember the wiggle, 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 oh, wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. And like there's a part of the song, like a break in there, where you could totally feel the absence of where a guitar solo would go, but you just hear like the rhythm continuing. And so no clue why he would have like excised a Slash solo out of it, but it's right there, that song.
Wild. Well, you know, I actually did find something I wanted to. I don't know. If this is something we're gonna want to cut later, because I haven't actually read it.
Let's hear it.
Sense about sex. Ask Beth. 13-year-old wants to stop spankings. Dear Beth, I'm a 13-year-old guy. My stepmother is mostly very nice, and we get along fine. But when I do something wrong, she takes my pants down, bends me over her knee, and spanks my bare bottom with her hairbrush.
Wow.
The spanking hurts, but the embarrassment is worse. She makes me cry and promise not to do it again, and then kisses me and says I'm forgiven. Sometimes, when I am alone and I think about this, I get an erection. I feel ashamed and confused. What's wrong with me? I asked her to find another method, but she just smiled and said something. Sometimes a spanking is the best thing. I'm much too ashamed to tell my dad.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
There's a lot there.
Guilty in Brookline. Yeah, we'll see what Beth has to say in response. She says, I don't believe in spanking, especially not teenagers. Since parents want you to become adult, they should discipline you in adult ways. Taking down a kid's pants in particular is particularly bad. Sorry, your involuntary reaction shows that it involves sexuality with punishment and thoroughly confuses the issue. If you can't tell your dad, can you show him this column? I'm sure your stepmother means very well, and a word from him could persuade her to take your good suggestion and find a different method of punishment.
Wow. Wow. Feel bad for the kid.
Yeah.
And he's showing his dad this article, and it's talking about his stepmother erection.
Yeah.
Yikes. Yeah. Yikes. Like, that poor kid.
Yeah. No, it's true. Like, I'm sure that, like, you know what, actually, I was going to say, like, I'm sure, like, as an adult, he's probably still doing it. It's just, but that's actually, yeah.
Now he's like, probably into, like, S&M now.
Well, you know what? Like, I like, went to a bar that when it opened at 6 a.m., you know, because, like, in Los Angeles, bars have to close at 2 a.m. and they can open again at 6 a.m. sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I was just kind of curious to see what kind of alcoholics were actually there at 6 a.m. You know, it was Guilty in Brookline.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was drinking away his woes.
Yeah.
And then whenever he wanted a new shot, he just said, spank me again, Hal.
He was holding the gripping tight to the hairbrush right there.
Yes, he was.
I think something was going on with the stepmother there too. I can picture her contriving reasons and excuses to spank him.
Yeah. It's also so weird that there are so many like step sibling, step parent, like pornographic themes currently.
Yeah.
It sucks. Yeah. Give me the good old days. I don't know. The good old days. So like the 1970s when people just seemed like they were having a good time and like...
Yeah, or like what happened to the pizza delivery guys, you know?
Yeah. Is it hot?
Mm-hmm.
Wah, 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 wah. So should we get into the episode?
Yeah, let's do it.
So our cold open, I believe that Brian is telling a dirty joke to, is it Lowell, Antonio, and Joe? Yep. Oh, Brian. Yeah, Brian's telling the dirty joke. Yeah. And as he like starts to hit the punchline, Faye walks up and Joe kind of does like, so the setup, as you said earlier, okay, so the hooker says to the gynecologist, my hourly rate might be higher, but at least, and then, yeah, Joe goes, hi, Faye.
Yeah. We can't tell a blue joke around an old lady.
Well, actually, that's just how Joe greets Faye every morning.
They did. They wanted to preserve her sense of innocence, you know?
Yeah. And so she's like, what are you guys doing? And then Lowell, of course, is, you know, not recognizing the situation that like Joe and Brian are trying to like not tell the joke with Faye around.
Yeah.
And so Lowell goes like, Brian was just telling a joke.
I love to hear it.
Yeah, I love jokes. Do you love jokes, Jared?
You know I love jokes.
I love jokes too.
The cornier the better for me.
Yeah, 100%. He rewrites it on the fly and basically makes a joke that says like, the hooker says to the gynecologist, my hourly rate should be higher, but that's the way it goes.
Yeah. Faye says, oh, that was funnier the way I heard it.
Right. Yeah. Faye knows those jokes.
Yeah. And I could not figure out what the actual punchline might have been.
Me neither.
Like, my hourly rate might be higher, but it's less invasive work.
My hourly rate might be higher, but when I'm done with the patient, they're shooting ropes all over the hairbrush. I know. Yeah. I mean, like, it's kind of a funny premise, right? Cause like a gynecologist charges X amount per hour and the hooker maybe charges more. Mm-hmm. Maybe not like, not quite like $110 an hour lawyer, but you know.
Yes.
Okay. What are your feelings about this cold open?
It was fine.
Yeah. I liked it.
Yeah.
I do like, that's a funny, that's a very funny situation too. Talent, like conversations that you can have with like your male coworkers that you like don't feel comfortable bringing to your female coworkers and stuff like that, which I feel like is like becoming less and less of a thing. I feel like with a lot of work environments, you should treat it like a professional workplace and like not even try to introduce that kind of things.
Oh yeah. Yeah. In today's day and age, it wouldn't even be appropriate to tell a joke like this.
Yeah.
In front of a taxi driver, the CEO of the company and the mechanic.
My buddy used to say, before he would like tell like a, like or pass on like a dirty joke like or you know like a scene from a show that like might be like a little bit blue, he'd be like, do I have your consent to do that? And we're like, yeah, go for it, but you know.
And then okay, so I'll say 3 stripes for that cold open.
Yeah, I would go 3.5. I liked it. Yeah. Man, you know what, you're right, 3 stripes, that's actually like better because it's real quick. It doesn't do any, like, my favorite cold opens are ones where there's like a little bit like a more complicated structure happening and like,
yeah,
like something that kind of surprises you. This is just a bunch of men sexually harassing a not really, yeah. But it's ooh, question for you. Is that tie new or is it just that a clear tie view?
Oh yeah. Let's do it.
Brian's tie report.
I'm gonna say it's new.
I think it's new too.
It's like Well, tell me what you think of it. But to me, it looked like a golden kind of yellowy kind of tie with maroon or red accents. And it looked like kind of like Fairleaf or Little Moons.
Mm-hmm.
Looked almost like a Christmas ornament.
I feel like there were some feathery kind of accents to it too.
And he had one other tie this episode.
Was that also new, or is that?
I think that one we've seen before. It was like, I want to say it was like a little emerald or greenish with red wispy things. It kind of looked like a watercolor painting a little bit.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of when I said the feathery sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had two ties this episode. The cold open, that's, I believe, the only time we see the first tie.
Brian, two ties, Hackett.
Mm-hmm.
Brian with an eye.
So that's how we know that the cold open happened on a different day.
Mm-hmm. Well, Friday the 13th, probably.
Yeah. I don't think it was foggy that day either.
Yeah. You know what? I think you're... Well, to be honest, though, I haven't the foggiest.
She was much funnier the way I heard it.
When we opened the show, I know you caught that gorgeous new B-roll.
Oh, I might have missed that. Curses.
Yeah, we got a B-roll, like a panning shot of a pier at Nantucket.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
A little bit off my game today, maybe. I did watch this episode twice, but...
I thought for sure you'd catch that, but it's...
I do love the B-rolls, yeah.
It's nice because it's like an overcast shot, that B-roll, and then we cut into the terminal. And I love the effect of all the fog outside the window. We saw that one other time, I think, in the first season. And we learned that flights are grounded due to fog.
And we learned that Faye has indoor recess activities.
Yes, that's true.
Do you remember that? Like,
mm-hmm. Rain days,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, which I wonder if that's like a West Coast thing, because... I've always loved like movies set in like Chicago and stuff where the entire school is indoors.
Growing
up in like Los Angeles, all of our schools were just like the only like indoor is like the classroom itself and everything else is outdoor. Even like the cafeteria was like, it was covered, but it was outdoor.
And I remember feeling jealous that on the kids on TV had big hallways with lockers and stuff.
Yeah.
Never had none of that.
No. So I wonder if like when it rains there, they just do recess as normal, which was already indoors to begin with because of, mm-hmm. like, you know, freezing temperatures and stuff.
Yeah.
But out here, when it rains, like the teacher has games you can play like in the classroom where it's like throw a ball from desk to desk, or like, I don't know. Yeah, like little games mm-hmm. you could play.
It's true. And then Joe has Faye notify everyone over the intercom that all the flights are canceled for now. That's when we get our guest star, who's a bit miffed, and they advise him to check into a hotel. And Antonio is excited to take the cab fare.
Yeah, I want to say like this is one of I like the sentiment behind this joke, but he says, "Oh, this is so sad. All day long, you poor people paying me so much money in cab fare going back and forth." And like, I wish he didn't say the paying me so much money in cab
fare. I know. Yeah.
I feel like it kind of like steals from the punchline.
Totally. Like they didn't trust us enough to get that. Like, oh, he's making money all these fares. Yeah.
Oh, like he could be like, oh, this is so sad all day long. You poor people hiring me back and forth. Mm-hmm. You know, and then then at the end when he goes, I love it. It would have like a little bit more weight to it. I love this fog.
Hey man, good punch up. I like that. Yeah.
Anyway, but I also really like Antonio throughout this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I think he might have, we'll get to it, but I feel like he might have had the line that made me laugh the hardest. Oh, he did. Yes. Yeah.
I can't wait to find out what that is.
I bet you'll realize it when we get to it.
And Lowell's got a hypothetical for Brian. Yes. He's wondering if a brontosaurus could bite through his boat.
Yeah. Could eat your boat in one bite.
Brian plays along and says, sure, I think he could.
And then Lowell says, it was a trick question. Everyone knows a brontosaurus was a plant eater. So chew on that one, college boy.
And then he turns around and trips over a luggage and falls on the floor.
Yeah. I like Lowell in this episode.
And they're making great use of the most of this episode. The first half is I would say 60-70% of this episode is all in the terminal, and they're making good use moving around. Now we move to Roy and Helen at the counter. Great moment here. Roy has just enjoyed a sandwich and he's sucking his teeth trying to get a morsel of food out of them.
He was just enjoying a succulent counter sandwich meal. Hey, succulent. Do you know what I'm talking about? Have you seen that video?
No.
It's like this Australian man, he's being arrested because he's been like dining and ditching and at restaurants around town. And but as he's like being arrested and being forced into the police car, he's like, how dare you arresting me? All I was doing was enjoying a succulent Chinese food meal.
I did see that.
It's wonderful.
I didn't know what it was from, though.
Yeah, this is great.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So Roy has just enjoyed a succulent diner meal.
Yeah. But he's like... I love that.
Yeah,
annoying, like, Helen.
Yeah, and, he's like sucking, forcing air through his teeth, like kind of like trying to force something out, trying to dislodge something.
And he's like, pork.
Yeah, Roy, you just had a tuna fish sandwich. Pork was yesterday's special.
And your point. Then we swerve on over to Brian and Joe. Brian wants to take off, and Joe says, hold on just a minute. I've maxed out my flight hours. Once this fog clears, you need to be up in the air, Brian. And Brian comes back with, but Joe, come on. There's this girl.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe said, it's always a girl, Brian. Come on. And I loved this line from Brian. A Brothers Grimm had once upon a time. I have. There's this girl. Who do you think is happier at bedtime?
Yeah, I love that line.
And then that's when Faye rallies the troops and pulls out her foggy day fun box, her recess box, indoor recess box.
Which is so funny that everybody reacts. Sorry, I have like a lemonade in my mouth. It's just so funny how everybody reacts so harshly to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like
it's kind of like, we've been there before.
It's
a bit childish, you know. But Joe, because Joe is just like, come on, can't we just sit and have a normal civilized conversation? And then Lowell comes in immediately holding up his boot and entices Joe to smell the bottom of my shoe. And then that's when they all dive in to the fun box.
Yeah, really cute.
So you would like to dig into Faye's fun box, right?
You mean... I want to fuck Faye, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
But it's like really fun because we go upstairs, right?
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We jump to the next scene.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, we're sort of downstairs and Helen is playing like a drawing game, like win, lose, or draw, or Pictionary, drawing on a chalkboard.
Yeah.
She's trying to draw. She's like... she's got like a stick figure circled and she's feverishly just drawing dots.
Yes,
and
yes.
And Lowell's trying to guess that, being like, dot man, the dots, whatever.
Hello, Dottie. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're out of time. They lose. And yeah. Lowell really shows her up.
Well, I love he does, but like I love like Helen exasperated. Dot man? What were you thinking? And he goes, I was thinking Dot Man.
He's all, why didn't you just do this? And in like 2 seconds flat draws a perfect snowman.
Mm-hmm.
And Helen demurs. Oh, I could have done that. That's one way to do it.
Yeah. Like his perfect snowman too is not even just the three simple, like, you know, progressively larger circles as you go down. He also draws the hat. He draws the coal eyes. He draws the carrot nose. He draws like little suit buttons down the front.
Yeah, we learned Lowell's quite the doodler.
Yeah. I think that was something that Thomas Hayden Church brought with him when they hired him for the role, and he finally got a chance to show it off.
It's his skills. It's on his CV.
I can ride horses and I can draw snowmen.
What do you think about as we move up to the upper level where with Antonio, Brian, and Joe, what do you think of this moment?
I thought it was, hold up, do over. I thought it was pretty fun.
Yeah.
So we pan up, right? Like does the camera kind of like float up?
I think it pulls up, pans up.
We got the crane. They got the crane for this shoot.
Yeah.
But basically, yeah. So like, Brian, Joe, and Antonio are making paper airplanes, and they're gonna like Joe's laying out the rules. All right, the plane that flies the farthest gets 10 points, 5 points for any acrobatic feats, 3 points for a perfect landing. Mm-hmm. Anything that goes behind Roy's counter to the left of the passenger waiting area is out of bounds. And both Antonio and Brian are both being Antonio, Joe, you're sucking the fun out of this game. And then Brian continuing with his tone that we talked about earlier. This is a game. I thought I died and gone to the boring part of hell.
Yes. And bratty so teenager Brian.
Oh, wait, do over.
Oh, do over.
Yeah. So basically, like, as Joe tries to throw his plane and immediately, like, just plummets into the floor. And he tries to do a do over, but Antonio and Brian aren't having it.
Nope. Yeah, and he goes, well, if you let me finish the rules, I would have said there's no do-over, but you didn't let me finish the rules. Brian whiffs it too, also like throws it right into the floor.
And he wants a do-over too.
Yeah. Orville and Wilbur, no do-overs. It's a my turn.
Yes. And so he throws it and it coasts along, like lands perfectly. And he says, Italian design.
Oh, I thought it was cute that the cab driver beat the two pilots who you'd think would know a little bit of thing of two, like about the principles of aviation. But as they run out of games to play, here's where it gets really exciting. Helen draws the gang in to pull out Brian and entices Brian to pull out his classic party trick. As he says, it's one of the few things I picked up in the Caribbean that I didn't have to take penicillin for.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. Brian is going to do hypnosis on the crew.
Yes, yes.
He hypnotizes
Joe. Yeah, we were talking about your thoughts on hypnosis.
Yeah.
You know what I wanted to mention, actually? Sorry for the quick do-over. I was watching... it was like a TV dating show that was almost like a pop-up video where it would have like little like pop-up blurbs.
Yeah.
Like cracking jokes. Maybe it might've been
Blind Date.
Maybe it was like a VH1 dating show or something.
Yeah.
They had an episode where the blind date like was like this beautiful woman being set up with like a hypnotist.
Okay.
And he was trying to convince the woman to let him hypnotize her during the date. Ooh. and she was like so not okay with it.
Yeah.
And he was getting real like worked up because she wouldn't let him. Like, what do you mean? Like, it's not weird. Whatever. and I remember being like, yeah, this guy is like a kind of a fucking creepo.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what that guy's name was?
What?
Guilty in Brookline.
Guilty in Brookline.
Yeah. He had a hairbrush with him and everything.
Poor kid.
So yeah, I thought they had all this really fun too.
Mm-hmm.
where Brian starts hypnotizing.
Yeah, he does Joe first. Hypnotizes him to cluck like a chicken whenever he hears the weird word tortilla, which comes back a few times.
Yeah.
I like how everyone doesn't like really realize they've been hypnotized after they've been hypnotized.
Yes. Yeah. Also, what did you think of the line where Brian says something like, I normally only do this with women. So don't be uncomfortable if Joe starts coming on to me.
I mean,
what does he say?
I think.
Oh yeah. If Joe starts coming on to me, don't be alarmed. What the fuck?
Implying that Brian's a little pervy. He's the guy on the blind date trying to convince the woman to let him hypnotize her so he can, I guess it's like a telepathic roofie or something.
Also, I thought it was like maybe a little bit too on the nose, like when he says that line, like, so if Joe starts coming on to me, don't be alarmed. We like zoom in on Lowell and like Lowell like looks directly into the camera.
I told you so.
Breaking the fourth wall.
I set this up in season one, called it all along.
That he did.
Yeah, don't be surprised if I'm choking his chicken.
Yeah. So anyway, I like that they like kind of edit it too, like where Brian starts to hypnotize Joe and then we cut to like him fully hypnotized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then they do Lowell next.
Mm-hmm.
And they also do the kind of dissolve out. Where they start the hypnosis, cut to, oh, he's hypnotized. And Roy wants Lowell to confess his deepest, darkest secret.
I also really liked Joe's like looking at Lowell and he's like, is he under? And then I think Roy goes, it's hard to tell. He always has that look on his face.
he does look like zombified.
And here's where somebody says, what should we have Mr. Mathers do for us? And then Antonio suggests that he rotates his tires.
What? I need my tires rotated.
What's funny about that? Nothing. It's just time.
But when they do ask, Lowell, what's your deepest, darkest secret? He continues, once when I was out of underwear, the gang cuts him off. They don't want to hear it. Hey, what's your fondest memory? Once when I was out of underwear. and then, no. Okay, that's enough of, that's enough from Lowell. And then we learn that Helen doesn't want to be hypnotized. He had previously hypnotized her, I guess, to act like, he gave her the hypnotic suggestion to act like Juanita the Mexican jumping bean. But then that's when they hypnotize Roy next, and he make sure to tell them that no biggins can be persuaded to do anything they don't want to do.
That's right.
But then cut to, he's prancing around the terminal, dancing and singing. And this is when he's singing the Doris Day song, Buttons and Bows.
And I have like a transcript of the whole episode. And so I know the words are, my bones denounce the buckboard bounce and the cactus hurts my toes. It's a moose where girls keep wearing those silks and satins and linens it shows. And I'm all yours in buttons and bows. And like, he's dancing around the thing. Mm-hmm. He's flipping up the tail of his jacket. It's it's wonderful. It's so great.
Yeah. Yeah. David Schramm getting to show off his dance moves.
Yeah. He's got some.
The line I missed, though, is like, so I was saying, he sings the song and then he plants it down back in the stool.
Yeah.
And okay. They're like, okay, what should we do next? What should we do next with Roy? And they go, hey, why don't we ask him his deepest, darkest secret? This line from Faye was great, especially the way she said it, where she's like,
oh yeah,
I'm disgusted by what he admits.
Yes. Yeah. That was super funny.
But they do ask Roy what's his deepest, darkest secret, and what does he say?
I once did a bad thing.
Wrong. Evil. Money.
I did a bad, bad thing. He went full Chris Isaac. Money? What money? I stole $250,000. What? You stole $250,000? Man, that's a lot of tortillas. And then Joe clucks. They play that really fun.
Yeah, and I like the look Joe gives after he clucks, like half surprised, like what just happened?
Yeah, and then Helen just starts hitting him. Mm-hmm. Helen, stop! What are you doing? He's got $250,000 and he's still stiffing me on tips.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if that was more Helen or Chris Tucker.
and he continues on to explain, like, he was eating at the all-you-can-eat buffet at Ollie Anderson's Little Taste of Oslo.
Yeah.
Dropped a meatball on the ground and found this suitcase filled with money.
But I also love, like, there's some great jokes in here. All you can eat for $5. So what happened? I can't believe what I did. I can't believe what I did. What? I filled up on salad and bread. The cardinal sin of all you can eat is like filling up on the cheap, the cheap calories.
Yeah, but he goes on. He basically took this suitcase full of money. Mm-hmm. And
but Lola wants to know what happened to the meatball.
Yeah. Which Brian says, he became a mechanic at the airport.
Yeah. Yeah. Continuing his Chandler delivery.
Yeah.
He became a mechanic at the airport. Yeah, dunce. Ooh. I dunced him.
Bada bing.
Yeah, there's your sign.
But this, I guess he was okay, we know now in hindsight that he was not hypnotized at this point, lying.
Yeah.
But I guess that he did pull from his memory bank that that's something that actually happened, because Faye also remembered reading about the poor man in the newspaper that lost the money.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they ask him where the money is now. He says that he buried it in his backyard,
6 paces off of the house or something.
But here's my favorite Antonio line.
Yeah.
Roy, did you spend any of the $250,000? And he says, oh, I bought a couple of suits. And then Antonio goes, okay, he's got all but $75. Oh, such a good burn.
He wears cheap suits, gang.
He wears cheap suits.
Can you believe it? But he tells him he's going to dig it up tomorrow. The neighbors are getting nosy.
Mm-hmm.
They wake him up. They learn. And he says, oh, what are you people looking at? Again, right. Like the next guy did not realize he was hypnotized.
Right, right, and, right.
They learn the fog's not lifting. They're closing for the night. So Roy runs off, announces he's running off to Ollie Anderson's because suddenly I have a taste for sardine loaf.
Right. You think you know somebody? Yeah, all these years. Who knew he liked Norwegian food?
And the gang deliberates about what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Do we call the cops? Do we plead with him to return the money? But they decide they're just going to go dig it up.
They go to dig it up. Yep. Mm-hmm. And we have like a fun, a new set.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I really, when I see a set like this and I'm like, okay, how do they shoot this in a studio where you're like actually digging a hole? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you think that they like just shot it in a backyard, or do you think they actually like brought like dirt into a set?
It looked like a set to me, but I'm like, maybe they have a sound stage where there's, you know, what do you call it when a stage has like a under part, like a floor underneath? I don't know. I don't know. I honestly don't know how they shoot something like this.
Yeah. Me neither.
How do you dig a 4-foot hole in a, on a soundstage,
right?
Without raising the whole damn set.
Because the other option too, I think, would be to like go to like a location and then just set up like wind guards and screens and stuff to kind of like make it look like a set, more or less.
Ah, yeah.
Like to kind of like control the lighting and like control the sound.
Yeah, it still looked very much like a set to me. So I don't know.
Yeah, maybe it was a set, and maybe they just like brought dirt and like sod or whatever.
The studio audience was present wherever it was.
Oh, yeah, maybe it was just a set. It's probably not that hard to do because they'll bring like, you know what I mean? They'll fill the Coliseum with dirt for like the monster truck rally and stuff. And so I'm sure it just like a truckload of dirt with like a little bit of rollout grass on top and then just dig through it.
Yeah. I was surprised too that Joe just happened to have three shovels in his trunk. What's that about?
Yeah, good point.
Is that like Joe getting up to?
Is that a Big Island thing? You have to have shovels in your trunk?
I don't know. I don't know why Joe would have three shovels in his trunk.
It's just Barry and Gale.
Yeah, we never saw Gale again.
Break up with me.
But they argue. Okay, they're in Roy's backyard. They need to pace out six paces. And a little bit of funny business here about what's a pace versus stride versus what does Joe call it?
mincing.
And Antonio points out you have to take into account Roy's legs.
Yes, yeah.
But Helen ends up pacing out six paces. They pick the spot where, okay, we're going to dig right here. We're going to find that suitcase. All the men start digging with the shovels, and Helen is snooping through the window at Roy's house. She sees, Oh my God, he's got an orange shag carpet.
This is also like where Faye assigns the men to start digging, and then Brian says like, "Who put you in charge?" And she goes, "I brought the
cocoa and the marshmallows."
Yeah, and that's what he says. I would follow you to the gates of hell or whatever.
It's like, okay, Brian. But Brian does like treats, though. That's consistent.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and Helen spots a boy tinkling bourbon into the glass on the bar there.
Yeah. And is that a thing?
I was thinking, I think of those like Italian fountains, you know, where they're, it's just little boys peeing.
Yeah, so that's such a weird thing.
I know. And then he has a portrait of Emmett Kelly made out of macaroni shells. Then so we don't have to watch them dig a hole. They cut to kind of the.
Sorry,
the
I'm
hole.
Like, I am. Oh, I am watching them dig a hole because I put it back on just to kind of see if I could divine whether or not it's a. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it does look like a set.
I guess they could have just like raised the whole setup and so they to leave space for a hole.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think that like it would also just be easier for them to bring dirt, put grass mm-hmm. over it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
because they actively are digging into it. They're like,
yeah,
like,
you know, they're inside the hole.
They're putting their shovels to the top layer of grass and like digging that dirt. But it is also very loose dirt.
Yes.
So yeah. that does kind of like extra points on the set side.
Yeah. Have you ever dug a hole of that size and width?
No, but I've the times that I have tried to dig. I mean, I don't think I probably had tried to dig anything since I was like a kid.
Yeah.
But I remember it being really difficult.
Yeah, it is strenuous work. Like you get a couple inches down and you're hitting like clay, like really compounded dirt. And then in a yard like that, you're inevitably going to run into tree trunks, which that's tough work digging around tree trunks.
Roots.
Yeah.
Tree roots.
You got to get out the sawzall, cut those up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You got like clods, you got like rocks usually mm-hmm. and like.
Yeah. But they do a time jump to where that now they have a substantial hole mm-hmm. and the gentlemen are in amidst a conversation where they're discussing what may be the smelliest moment of history.
I thought this was so okay. I went to my friend's comedy show last night.
Yeah.
And she wrote a sketch about, I don't want to steal her idea because it's really funny.
Well, you're attributing it to her.
Yeah, but like the idea of it is that people from the past smelled bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just also so funny because you know, I saw that sketch like where she brings she uses a time machine to bring I think her great 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 grandmother forward in time and like they're in the lab and they just can't stop talking about how bad she smells. But I was like earlier thinking about like previous to that, like earlier this week thinking about what would it be like? And I was also thinking, like, how quickly would you just adjust? Like, if you like got sent back to like 1600 or whatever, and you're like living in the in like London back then, and it's just like shit smells terrible. Yeah, yeah. How I wonder how soon do you just kind of like the smells are just like you stop even noticing how bad it smells.
I think pretty quick, because like, have you ever like been on a farm for a substantial amount of time? At first, you're like, "Oh, that cow shit! Oh my!" But then you kind of it just disappears after a little while.
No, but I've had some sick to my stomach moments in the bathroom where I stop noticing how bad it smells.
Yeah. I think you do get used to it.
Tell me about this time you spent digging holes and like living on a farm.
Well, I never said I lived on a farm, but you know, when you're in that environment for a while.
Yeah, for sure.
But I did used to dig holes a lot. At one point I was, I don't mean this as a brag, but I was certified by the state of California for digging holes.
Okay.
And so I dug a few holes in my day, both recreationally and professionally.
Cool. Is that, you digging graves?
Yeah. I'm not going to say I was a grave robber. They don't call it that anymore, but...
I think they still do call it that. So they're finding car batteries, weirdly.
Yeah, this was great. Antonio's like thumps a car battery outside of the hole, and he's like, "Oh, another car battery." And they find that Roy had just like buried car batteries and paint cans.
Yeah. Oh, also, sorry, I totally like interrupted. You're talking about their discussion about the worst smelling moments in history. Yeah. Which is very funny.
I think the order they had was a little wrong, because it went, I forget what Joe's was, but then Brian had the signing of the Declaration of Independence, and Antonio had the bubonic plague like on Bring Out the Dead Day. But I thought Brian's was the best one.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe's was Noah's Ark Below Deck 39th Day at Sea, which I thought was a great one.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Brian's was the signing of the Declaration of Independence, the middle of summer, 100 guys in a room, windows shut, wearing powdered wigs and heavy velvet suits, and Ben Franklin asks, "Whose cheese is this?"
Yes, yeah.
That I love that one. And also, it made me think of her sketch. Like, perfect. Great. And then, Antonio's, here's one. "The bubonic plague, high noon, on throughout your dead day."
Yeah, Brian's should have been the last one. That was great, but
for sure.
Faye announces that the cocoa is ready, and Lola's surprised that the marshmallows are in the cocoa, because he has been munching on what he thought were the marshmallows, but they were in fact mushrooms.
Yes,
and we learn he's actively hallucinating.
Yeah, he's been eating toadstools. And then he said, I didn't think that marshmallows had stems. And then he goes, "However, that would explain the wild hallucinations I've been having for the past half hour."
And I love how Thomas Hayden Church plays it, because he just plays like normal Lowell. So like, we're to intimate that he's like having these extreme hallucinations, but he's totally composed.
Yeah, and this to me, this is great. I feel like this, because I know like I complained in a previous episode that I feel like their depiction of Lowell is kind of slipping, but I feel like this is capturing it exactly the way like that I've like grown to know Lowell over the first 2.5 seasons.
He's just matter-of-factly detailing the hallucinations he's having.
Yeah, and then Faye says, "Lowell, how could you do something like that?" And he goes, "I don't believe people with antlers have the right to criticize."
Yeah.
And then Helen discovers a hot tub.
Yeah, she finds the blueprints for the hot tub. She finds a hot tub and the blueprints for the hot tub. And she surmises that they have been tricked into digging the hole.
Yeah, somebody says, "I wonder where he's going to put it." And then Helen's got the blueprints and she says, "As near as I can tell from these plans, roughly about 6 paces from the southwest corner of his house.
Mm-hmm.
They've mm-hmm. been had.
Yeah.
I do love like Faye though. Well, we sure put a crimp in his plans. We just dug a great big hole right there. And then, ladies and gentlemen, I believe we've been had. Faye says that she's confused. And then Lul says,
"You think you're confused? Check out the look on that giant frog."
And Antonio, "Oh, I should call my uncle Pasquale, the plumber.
They call him the plumber.
Oh, he's a hitman?
No, he's a plumber. He'll hook this thing up, charge Roy an arm and a leg."
Here's, I think this might have been when I laughed the hardest. When Lowell says, "Hey, can someone give me a hand over here? I just dropped all my fingers."
Yes. And now we cut to later. And here comes Roy strolling in with a flashlight, like checking out the work that's been done on his behalf. And he's just like laughing like Muttley.
Yes, he's like Muttley. And he's kind of all, he's chuckling like Muttley. Sorry, I cut you off about to do a spotless Muttley impression.
Oh, I don't know if I could. I was trying to like muster one, but it's not coming. Can you do a good one?
No, I can't. But he's also interspersed with his giggling. He's also kind of humming and singing Buttons and Bows Again.
Oh, that's great.
And then I love how he like inspects the hole, takes a measuring tape down in it.
He just like...
And I love how he inspects the hole and is like, "Oh, close enough."
Yeah. He's got a measuring tape at the ready.
And here's where they surprise him as though it's Joe's birthday party and they're in a crate.
Yeah.
Jump out from behind the bushes.
Yep.
What's the payoff with that? Because like we already know that they set up a comeuppance for Roy. What's the payoff to just hiding in the bushes for question mark amount of time?
I don't know. Yeah.
Because they really don't know when he's coming home, if he's just going to go in the front door and go to sleep. But they're just like, "Oh, we will hide standing in a row behind the bushes."
I don't know, but it pays off in a kind of fun way.
It does, yeah.
And they go, "We know about the hot tub, mister." And then Roy like looks like, momentarily like ashamed, and then he goes, "It was a pretty good trick, huh?" He's really proud.
"Hey, just to show you guys there's no hard feelings, anytime you're in the mood for a nice hot tub, go blow bubbles in your bath water."
Yeah. I also like when he's making fun of being hypnotized. "Ooh, I'm hypnotized." And then he goes, "I want to tell you guys, digging that dirt, that was sweet enough. But for you to haul it away, that was above and beyond the call of duty." And then he opens up the back door to his house and all the dirt spills out,
mm-hmm.
covering him.
Yep. And he gets suffocated in dirt, chokes to death and dies.
And the last thing you see is his open pants and his dick, just all of it. It's just wiggling around.
He thought of his step aunt and got an erection.
Yes.
And Lowell has a joke to cap it off.
"Oh, yeah. You might want to consider running the vacuum a little more often."
And I was like, I don't know. That joke didn't work for me too well.
Yeah, same.
Especially because like he's supposed to still be high. So there could have been an interesting play on that.
100%. They could have. I don't have any like immediate pitches, but there would have been like a funner way to kind of do it.
But all in all, a funny ass episode.
100%. Yeah, it was really good.
These are my favorite types of episodes, you know, just the wacky episodes.
Yeah, where everybody, like I think you call it earlier, like an ensemble episode.
Mm-hmm.
Like while they're digging, Helen's peeking in the window. Mm-hmm. And Faye's making cocoa and like Lowell's just being high.
Yeah. And we never, throughout the whole episode, we never stay with any one or two characters. From it like rotates, it cycles through little pairings of groups of jokes.
Yeah.
So even though you just are in two locations, it's not moving around a lot, but you get the sense of like this kind of pace consistently chugging along.
And I don't even know if I have a VIP because I feel like everybody is doing so much work.
But for me, it's Roy.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. If I had to choose one, it's going to be Roy.
It's
because like of that musical scene and just his sneaking into the backyard.
Yes, it's got to be Roy. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And like I would say, if not Roy, it would be like Antonio because he had a lot of great moments.
Yeah, definitely. Like Roy, like Antonio had some of my favorite jokes throughout. The $75 suits joke. That one, his delivery on it is really great.
So are we locking in Roy as VIP?
Do-over. Do-over. Okay.
Do-over, yeah.
Wait, that line, do it over.
Are we locking in Roy as VIP?
Yeah, I am. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, because like Brian is funny, but he's kind of in that like extra dry sarcasm mode. Mm-hmm. Helen's like really fun in this episode too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, I mean, David Schramm's just killing it. Yeah. I also forgot to mention in that scene when when he's like running around the terminal doing the musical number. Uh-huh. You know, like jumping, like he's like driving on to like the counter, like jumping up and like kind of doing all that stuff. the way that he like sits back down and immediately is hypnotized again is just so funny.
Yeah.
Just like,
yeah. And you gotta keep in mind too, that that's Roy's character acting. Yeah. He's pretending to be hypnotized. Yeah. So like, I appreciate that Roy put all that extra into, he doesn't mind humiliating himself.
We know like that Faye fills her life full of extracurriculars, but I feel like Roy's got to have, because he's a gourmand.
Mm-hmm.
He loves musicals. I like the picture that he like secretly flies off to like Hyannis every once in a while, and he's like part of like some like off Broadway theater or something like that.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. Don't waste your time with this crap. What you want to do is you want to get yourself a real like a Neil Simon play, you know, like I don't know, something.
So should we stripe rate this one?
Yeah, you know what? I'll go. I was gonna go 4. Mm-hmm. I like this one a lot.
Yeah, I'm gonna go 4 stripes. Ensemble, funny, wacky episode.
Yeah, episodes like this really like are such a relief. Not that I like didn't enjoy, because like the last one was the precursor to Joe murdering Gail, right?
Yes, yeah.
The Women Who Lunch.
Yeah.
And that one I thought was fun too, but it I don't always love it when they get into like the weeds with like the personal romantic drama and stuff like that.
Yeah. No, I loved that episode too, but that's like, this is a different flavor of,
yeah,
this is the in the wacky box, and I love the wacky box.
And the same guys that wrote like A Policewoman Scorned, right? And I think a few others you mentioned.
Yeah.
Because that one too is like really fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, cool. Yeah. 4 stripes for me too.
Cool.
Shit. Okay. We talked about this whole episode of Wings.
Wings.
Wings, wings, wings.
Wings, wings.
And I'm excited to watch this next episode entitled The Late Mrs. Biggins.
Oh,
ooh,
wow. Maybe it's
a ghost haunting or something.
Wow.
I'd love to see the return of Roy's son, too.
Ba-da-da-dum. So my first article today is... I'm going to pull from the Inquirer. Do over. The whole episode.
Oh, shit. We weren't recording.
Bullish on statues. It is easy to see why the Surrey District Commission is so worried that Damian Tribune might be able to keep a statue of a bull in the
How
front
far are
line
we taking this?
All right, sorry. Anyway, yeah, like that sounds really fun. Like, I wonder if we're going to like find out that his ex-wife isn't dead, that he's been lying about that or something. Because that I feel like that wouldn't be a beyond Roy.
Yeah, in my reading of next week's episode synopsis, I think that just may be the case.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. When I look up what the next episode's title is, I can't help but read the little blurb underneath.
Yeah, because I kind of imagined that they would do an episode where they're doing like flashbacks to like Roy's ex-wife or whatever.
That'd be fun though, too.
That would be. That would be really fun.
Well, we did talk about this episode of Wings. We will be back next time. If you liked what you heard, you can do stuff to show that.
Yep.
Well,
and like super thank you to anyone that has been leaving comments and reviews mm-hmm. and stuff. That's been awesome for us.
Definitely. So keep that up. And this, if you weren't able to watch this episode, like Emerson stated, email us at wingsnutsprogram@gmail.com and we'll help you out with that. And send us any other queries you have that way.
Woo-woo.
And Emerson, thank you for talking wings tonight.
Thank you, Jared. This is super fun.